when the storms get more severe, the flooding, the erosion, the permafrost degradation, what happens to us? What do we do now?
The Obama administration rejects a disaster request from NewTalk. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, January 18th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, state Senate Republicans want to limit spending for future legislatures.
I think we have to take some extra measures to make sure that once we get spending under control, we want to make sure it doesn't just pop up again.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, now distributing Boss Industrial Log Splitters, stocking gas and electric up to 34 ton, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. Artists, show us how you inspire Alaska. Apply now for an individual artist award. Deadline is March 1st. Learn more at rasmussen.org/IAA. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation.
President Barack Obama today turned down a request from the Western Alaska village of NewTalk for a disaster declaration. NewTalk applied for relief based on erosion and thawing permafrost that are expected to destroy the village within 3 years. It was a test of whether the nation's disaster laws apply to these kinds of climate change impacts. As Rachel Waldholtz of Alaska's Energy Desk reports, the answer from the White House was no.
NewTalk's relocation coordinator, Romy Cadiente, heard the news in a phone call Wednesday morning from Kenneth Murphy, the regional administrator for FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency.
We were shocked.
Cadiente says after years of trying to scrape together funding, he thought the disaster declaration was NewTalk's best chance to access the tens of millions of dollars needed to move the village out of harm's way. Engineers estimate NewTalk is losing an average of 70 feet per year to the Ninglick River, and Cadiente says the situation is now dire.
We're going to lose homes this year. We're going to lose our water supply this year. It is dangerous for our village. Where do we put these people? Do you ship them off to Bethel? And if so, who pays for all of that stuff?
A spokesperson with FEMA says, as a matter of policy, the agency doesn't offer details on why a president chooses not to issue a disaster declaration. She says only that NewTalk's request did not fit the requirements of the Stafford Act, the law that governs disaster relief. The request was unusual because it identified damage that's taken place over multiple years, as well as damage expected in the coming 3 years. Disaster declarations are usually issued in response to a single specific event. Mike Wallery is the village attorney. He says the existing system fails communities like NewTalk.
What this means as a practical matter is that the village is going to have to wait until these homes are destroyed, rather than taking any kind of preemptive disaster response.
Cadiente says it's particularly disappointing after Obama visited Alaska in 2015 and even mentioned the plight of climate refugees during his farewell address in Chicago when he said this.
Our children won't have time to debate the existence of climate change. They'll be busy dealing with its effects. More environmental disasters, more economic disruptions, waves of climate refugees seeking sanctuary.
Cadiente says that's NewTalk.
And when the storms get more severe, the flooding, the erosion, the permafrost degradation, what happens to us? What do we do now?
NewTalk plans to appeal the decision. The village has 30 days to submit an updated request to the incoming Trump administration. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Rachel Waldholtz in Anchorage.
The state Senate is generating ideas to make significant cuts to the state budget. They'd like to lock in lower spending levels into the future. APRN and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports on the Senate majority's priorities.
The Republican-led Senate majority is more focused on cutting spending to close the state's budget deficit than the new mostly Democratic House majority or independent Governor Bill Walker. The Senate majority is looking for $750 million in cuts over the next 3 years. New Senate President Pete Kelly says departments that make up the largest share of spending will see cuts.
Well, there's no question about it. There are some large cost drivers. We've discussed these year after year: health and social services, education, the university. So those will not be beyond scrutiny. And as a matter of fact, we'll be looking very closely at those.
The Senate majority is looking to cut 5% of the entire state budget this year, then cut 4% and 3% the next 2 years. Kelly, a Fairbanks Republican, says he expects the budget writing Senate Finance Committee to act fast and decisively.
It's like Willie Sutton, the old bank robber, when they asked him, Willie, why do you rob banks? Well, he said, because that's where the money is. Well, the money is in those three big agencies.
The Senate majority also is preparing to propose a new state law that would limit how much state government can spend. Kelly says he prefers that voters decide state spending by who they elect, but he says this didn't work during the recent rise in oil prices in the past decade before prices fell.
That seems to have gotten out of hand between about 2006 and 2013, and government got pretty big. And I think we have to take some extra measures to make sure that once we get spending under control, and we've done a pretty good job of doing that to this point, at least a good job of reducing, we want to make sure it doesn't just pop up again.
As far as ways to raise more money, Kelly says the Senate is likely to again pass a bill that would draw money from permanent fund earnings and reduce dividends. But, he says, the Senate majority currently doesn't favor an income tax. Senate Minority Leader Berta Gardner says all parts of the state budget deserve scrutiny, but the first place she'd look for spending cuts is a reduction in oil and gas tax credits. Gardner, an Anchorage Democrat, doesn't want to turn to reducing dividends first.
If that's going to happen, first of all, we need to look at oil tax credits. And we've said this for, I think, 4 years now. Say, what is our return on our huge investment?
Gardner opposes putting a limit on spending, saying she doesn't want to tie the hands of future legislatures when future needs aren't known. Kelly has described this session as reflecting a battle between capitalism and socialism. Gardner sees it differently.
What we really need to do is be listening to each other. And it doesn't have to be a battle. It can be a discussion. I hope everybody's ready to compromise a little bit to get there.
The Senate Finance Committee meets Thursday to hear about the state's forecast for revenues. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
The petition to change Anchorage's non-discrimination ordinance, which protects the civil rights of the LGBTQ community, will not move forward. A group of Anchorage residents submitted an application for the Protect Our Privacy initiative earlier this month. Today, Municipal Attorney Bill Falsey says it was not legal because it addresses too many different subjects.
State and local law require initiatives to address only a single subject. The Alaska Supreme Court has held that that rule allows voters to express their will through their votes more precisely, and it prevents policies that lack popular support from being enacted without due consideration or only because they are packaged with a more popular item.
The Protect Our Privacy initiative included provisions that limited access to restrooms based on genetics and anatomy at birth. It also would have allowed employers to fire people based on their views of marriage and premarital sex. Falsey says he did not have to address the constitutionality of these provisions because the application had already violated the single subject rule. The petition sponsors say they are reviewing the legal opinion and have no comment at this time. Anchorage's non-discrimination ordinance passed in 2015 and adds protections for people based on their sexual orientation and gender identity. An Alaska volcano active since mid-December has erupted again. Bogoslav volcano in the Aleutian Islands erupted at 1:20 p.m. today and sent up an ash cloud estimated at 31,000 feet. The Alaska Volcano Observatory raised the aviation threat code to red, the highest level. Ash clouds higher than 20,000 feet are a threat to intercontinental jet air traffic because ash can damage engines. The cloud height was reported by pilots. Satellite imagery indicates the cloud was moving to the northeast over the Bering Sea. Bogoslav Volcano is 850 miles southwest of Anchorage. The volcano erupted December 16th and more than a dozen times since. Many parts of Alaska are currently experiencing their coldest temperatures in years. But today, researchers made it official. Last year was the warmest year on record worldwide. Both NASA and National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration announced today that 2016 was the hottest year since record-keeping began in 1880. It's the third straight year of record high temperatures. That announcement follows the news that 2016 was also the warmest year in Alaska, as the El Niño weather pattern contributed to record-breaking temperatures from Ketchikan to Utqiagvik, formerly Barrow. And it comes as both the Arctic and Antarctic are experiencing extremely low levels of sea ice. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, despite some objections, the Fairbanks North Star Borough School Board reinstates certain sex education resources.
This stuff is pornography. Do we want pornography in our schools?
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
As it turns out, you don't need to wear a cape to save the community or a giant S on your chest to stand up for what's right. That's because the University of Alaska is working to build a better future for our state. Through education, the university is developing a skilled workforce with more teachers, engineers, and nurses to move Alaska forward. Join the university in leading the change Alaska needs. Visit drivechangeak.org to learn more. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
Websites previously banned by the Fairbanks North Star Borough School Board as resources for sex education have been reinstated. Last night, the school board reversed itself after hearing from the public. As KUAC's Robert Hannon reports, most of the objections centered on Planned Parenthood.
Back in October, the school board denied sex educators access to three websites, including Planned Parenthood. The idea was the educators could submit parts of the websites for school board approval, but teachers couldn't exercise their own judgment. Some teachers found that confusing since the board had approved other websites. So Tuesday night, the board reconsidered the ban. Those who testified, like Stephanie Brago, a parent and secondary health teacher, wondered why the district wasn't following its own policy.
It was decided, so I thought, that general sites were not going to be approved and that we had to submit specific pages on sites.
Others, like former school board member Cam Carlson, targeted material on Planned Parenthood site.
This stuff is pornography. Do we want pornography in our schools?
Indeed, most of the testimony centered on Planned Parenthood, with defenders like retired school teacher and librarian Nikki Eisman telling the board those condemning Planned Parenthood were cherry-picking information.
The first thing it said, Planned Parenthood believes that parents and guardians should be the primary sexuality educators of their children.
And Reverend Leslie Fales said, having counseled abused and sexually assaulted women, it was vital to give teachers access to responsible information.
Many of the pages available on these sites do offer teachers a way to have these very complicated conversations with kids and teens who may be in difficult relationships or in danger.
When it came for the board to vote, the last point resonated with school board member Sharon McConnell, who said she was a survivor of sexual violence. And board member Mike O'Brien said the sites addressed contemporary needs.
When I was in school, to be gay was to either suffer in silence or maybe to kill yourself. To be transgender was not allowed.
Colonel Sean Williams didn't disagree, but pointed to explicit content on the Planned Parenthood site, which he said was contrary to proposed school policies.
Even amongst teachers and counselors within the district, that we don't agree on what is inappropriate and what's not inappropriate. We don't agree on that.
At the end of the discussion, the board voted 4-2 to reinstate the websites. Because of lengthy public testimony, it was the only substantive issue the board addressed before adjourning. In Fairbanks, I'm Robert Hannon.
The state of Alaska has sued several federal land management agencies and top officials over a series of new predator hunting restrictions that went into effect over the past 2 years. The suit, filed on Friday in U.S. District Court in Anchorage, claims the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and National Park Service violated provisions of four federal laws when the agencies banned certain hunting practices on refuge and national preserve land, including the taking of brown bears over bait, the same-day airborne hunting of bears, and the hunting of bear cubs in certain circumstances. From KIYU in Galena, Tim Bodoni has more.
At the heart of the dispute are differing interpretations of key terms such as natural diversity, which the federal agencies claim to be protecting via the predator hunting restrictions. But Alaska Assistant Attorney General Cheryl Brooking argues that federal wildlife managers are willing to take those protections too far. She cites a recent example involving caribou on Unimak Island in the Alaska Maritime National Wildlife Refuge.
The wolves had moved in on the birthing grounds, and the state wanted permission to go in and take out some of the wolves to preserve the caribou because it was a very important subsistence resource for the people in that area. And the response from the federal government was, well, we're just going to let the natural processes occur, and it's okay for the caribou to blink out. That was the term used, blink out. The state doesn't manage that way. We manage for sustained yield of predators and prey, and we recognize the importance of hunting.
Brookings also notes that the state plans to take the federal agencies to task for failing to demonstrate a biological need for the increased predator hunting restrictions, which she argues violates the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act.
ANILCA allows the federal government to institute closures for periods when or areas where a closure is necessary for conservation of the resource or for protection of subsistence. Without any scientific or biological reason for these closures, then that's a clear violation of ANILCA.
The suit asks the court to vacate both the Park Service and Fish and Wildlife Service versions of the rule, to repay the state's legal costs, and to instruct the federal agencies to improve their consultations with the state of Alaska regarding wildlife management in the future. Representatives from the Fish and Wildlife Service Regional Office in Anchorage declined to comment on the lawsuit, citing the need for more time to review the suit and coordinate with agency lawyers. But after a public meeting in Galena last March, when the Fish and Wildlife version of the rule was in draft form, Chief of Alaska Refuges Mitch Ellis said that the rule was more about formalizing the agency's guiding principles rather than rejecting all forms of predator control outright.
We are not against predator control. Our agency uses predator control for, you know, a number of things, restoring species, when it helps meet the purposes of the refuge, etc. So what we're doing is clarifying when it's appropriate, when it's not.
The rule classifies the hunting practices in question as highly efficient methods and means of harvesting animals and finds them out of line with federal wildlife management mandates. Federal officials named in the suit include Interior Secretary Sally Jewell, Director of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Dan Ash, and Acting Director of the National Park Service Michael Reynolds. The federal government has 60 days to file a response to the suit. Aside from the lawsuit, Alaska's congressional delegation has been trying to overturn or defund the new rules using legislation, but without success. The predator hunting restrictions can also be overruled and replaced by the Federal Subsistence Board for federally qualified subsistence users on federal land. In Galena, this is Tim Bodoni.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight, from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
Alaska's Tobacco Quitline reminds you that 88% of Alaskans don't allow smoking in their home. A smoke-free environment helps prepare kids for a healthier life and a future free from tobacco. And it makes good economic sense. Secondhand smoke damages property, decreasing its value. Exposure to its toxins leads to disease and increased medical costs. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or enroll online at alaskaquitline.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline.
Yellow cedar trees grow from the top of California all the way to Alaska. And according to a recent study, the southeast part of the state could be the hardest hit with yellow cedar decline. That's due to the planet heating up. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has been petitioned to put yellow cedar on the endangered species list. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Jenkins has more.
Wayne Price is working on a 12-foot-tall totem pole in a studio in Haines. He uses a tool called an adze to shape an eagle and wolf design. He's about 6 months into the project, which includes carving not one, but two totems.
All of it's made out of yellow cedar.
When it's finished, it will make up a new sign for the local veterans housing complex. Price has been carving for about 45 years. He says what makes yellow cedar a good material is that it's resistant to rot. Traditionally, Alaska Native people use the bark from yellow cedar to weave blankets and clan hats. They use the trees to carve paddles and canoes. Price says there's a Tlingit creation story that highlights its importance.
That the killer whale was made out of red cedar and it floated too high. And it was made out of spruce and it didn't last very long. But when it was carved out of yellow cedar, that it floated right and was given life and was the creation of the killer whales.
Price buys most of his yellow cedar from a small mill in Hoonah. But in the past decade, while out on the water, he's noticed more dead standing trees. And he's not alone.
Essentially, yellow cedar's freezing to death.
That's Brian Buma, an assistant professor of forest ecosystems at the University of Alaska Southeast. Buma recently released a paper on how much yellow cedar could decline across its entire range. His team pinpointed actual yellow cedar trees from California to Prince William Sound. And with current climate projections, Buma was able to capture a glimpse of what that future could look like for yellow cedar.
So it's suggesting major changes. We don't think it's going to go extinct in 50 or 60 years, but it is going to look like a very different forest in large parts of Southeast.
He says so far, we've lost about 7% of the range of yellow cedar. That number might sound small, but it's actually about 1 million acres of trees. In the next half century or so, we could lose another 8%. Buma says yellow cedar is particularly vulnerable in the spring. In a normal year, a blanket of snow is there to insulate the roots.
Climate change is taking away that blanket. So when the temperature goes to 33 on average, say, during the winter, we don't get snow, we get rain. And if we do get a cold snap, the soil gets very, very cold, and that kills yellow cedar.
He says scientists started to notice the decline of yellow cedar back in the 1980s. Now it's one of the best documented cases of a tree species affected by the planet heating up.
This is a bowl of warm water with a strip of cedar bark.
Ricky Tagaban has been weaving in the Chilkat tradition for about 7 years. He's preparing to spin yellow cedar and merino wool into warp, a stiff thread he'll use to weave commissioned items, or one of his commercial pieces, iPhone bags, pendants, and long woven earrings.
When I became a full-time weaver, it was really crucial for me to learn how to make my own warp. Because before, I'd have to save up a lot of money to buy enough materials just to start a project.
Friends who weave baskets sometimes give him yellow cedar scraps. He's also gone out a couple of times to collect it himself. Tagaban says he is worried about the die-off of yellow cedar, but he doesn't think government officials should be in charge of its management.
Like, the point of colonization is outside groups coming in and controlling resources.
He says for thousands of years, indigenous people collected yellow cedar sustainably.
If you compare the way of life that came out of that 10,000 years of stewardship with the changes that have happened just in the last 200 years, it's insane the difference, you know? So the words like management, management is not stewardship.
The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service was petitioned to put yellow cedar on the endangered species list in 2014, but it still has a ways to go before a decision is made. A Fish and Wildlife spokesperson says there's a backlog due to federal funding issues. Tagaban hopes to still be weaving in the next 50 years, and he hopes there's enough yellow cedar for future generations to weave too. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau.
Brad Snow was 26 years old when he left Anchorage to start a life with his girlfriend, Lily Allen, near the Yukon River. The couple is featured in John McPhee's book, Coming Into the Country, published 40 years ago. Snow and Allen built a cabin on the Nation River, a tributary to the Yukon, But in 1976, the Bureau of Land Management told them they were trespassing and forced them off the land. After he met McPhee, Snow offered to take him by canoe from Eagle to Circle, a trip that took 4 days. Snow says it didn't take long for him to warm up to the writer.
I heard about him in town, and I told Lily, don't say a word to this guy. And then I managed to say a whole lot to this guy. She's always pointed that out to me. But I liked his attitude. He was kind of a geek, kind of a very unassuming. He was extremely good at putting people at their ease. One thing about John that was interesting, and I fell into it as well. As we were coming down the Charlie River together, I was in the stern of the boat, and we were going down through some sweepers and some things, and I thought, oh boy, watch this. He'll be able to see how good I am in this boat. He showed no proclivity to paddling, for instance, and yet later I found out that he'd grown up with a paddle in his hand. He was quite good at paddling. So, yeah, there were a lot of things about John that he just didn't come forth with initially, letting people tell their own story. John and I were sitting on the bank of the Charlie River. We had taken the boat up the Charlie a little ways. And through the time I spent with him up till then, he always expressed a real concern and fear of bears. And I knew that there were bears in the area, so I grabbed my rifle. We walked up and we were sitting there. And while we sat there, I was telling him about my friend Dave Evans, who seemed to have no sense of fear when it came to thin ice. And that I was really concerned about thin ice all winter long. And that came out in his article and in the book as that I was talking about how I was afraid of bears. And, it's a simple little thing and makes no difference at this point. As far as other areas of Alaska, there's just so much area still out there that's not easily accessed and not often traveled. That I think if I were given the task, I suspect I could do pretty well for a couple of years before I was found.
Brad Snow is in John McPhee's book, Coming Into the Country. He now lives half the year on a sailboat in Mexico and half the year in Fairbanks. Alaska's Energy Desk is celebrating the 40th anniversary of the book with a series of interviews, stories, and public forums this month. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Rachel Waldholtz, Annie Fite, and Ann Hillman in Anchorage, Andrew Kitchenman and Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau, Dan Bross and Robert Hannon in Fairbanks, and Tim Bodoni in Galena. Our audio engineer is Eric Bork, Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Wells Fargo, with over 13,000 ATMs and more than 6,000 branches coast to coast. For a branch location near you, visit wellsfargo.com. If subsistence is important to you, consider applying for a seat on your local Federal Subsistence Regional Advisory Council. The councils provide information and recommendations to the Federal Subsistence Board on subsistence hunting, trapping, and fishing. Deadline to apply is Friday, February 3rd. Call 1-800-478-1456 or email subsistence@fws.gov for more information. This message sponsored by your Federal Subsistence Board and the U.S. Departments of the Interior and Agriculture.
The University of Alaska Southeast is open for business to all Alaskans. 2017 is your year to finish a degree and increase your earning power with online courses in business, accounting, and management. Explore the options online at uas.alaska.edu/SOM. This message sponsored by UAS.
Support for Alaska Public Media's Energy News Desk comes from Bettisworth North, Architects and Planners, and the Atwood Foundation.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.